Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
Students around the world are asking questions about God, the truth, and the meaning of their lives. Your gift will put top-notch Catholic intellectuals in front of students who are seeking. Go to ThomisticInstitute.org/support-students to transform a student's life today. That's ThomisticInstitute.org/support-students.
So this is, I'm hoping, going to be one of the more practical Thomistic Institute lectures that you have received. So I run a business school, which is essentially a practical endeavor. So here's a question for you. If I told you I'm going to share something with you that is going to allow you to get more done more effectively and make life easier at the same time, would that be something interesting you'd want to know about? Okay, all right, good. Let's go there. I'll give you an analogy. So we have a grandson, our first grandchild. His name is Owen, and he's exactly at that stage where he's learning to walk. And it's fun to watch him trying to walk. Like you can tell he has the muscles to do it. He has the balance because he's balancing there. But every step is like conscious effort. Like, and then he falls down. But it's like, eventually, we know he'll learn how to walk. All of you did, you know. And I bet you don't think much. You don't have to concentrate much to walk, right? It's just a habit. It just happens. Like you want to walk something, you just walk. There's a traditional set of habits, not for walking, but for some things I think that are just as important. Habits for thinking, habits for acting, habits for dealing with our feelings. And particularly habits that help us make decisions, that make us interact with other people. That help us manage our emotions, that many people today don't develop much or at all. So they're like my grandson in his stumbling walking, but they stumble when they try to make decisions. So they stall, it takes them a while to make decisions, or the decisions aren't very good. As a society, we seem to have real trouble dealing with big decisions. People have trouble maintaining relationships with others, fewer people getting married, staying married, for example. Huge divisions in our society. In terms of managing emotions, you're all familiar, folks your age, there's an epidemic of anxiety and depression, right? Of levels we've never seen before. So what are these habits of thinking, acting, and feeling that I am talking about? I mean, you probably see where I'm going with this because it's in the title of the talk. I'm talking about the virtues, right? The virtues as habits. So virtue, a good habit that makes you good, right? A habit of human excellence. I want to make a few important distinctions here. First, the distinction between virtues and values. I am surprised how many people confuse those two words, but they are so different. So values are just talking the talk, right? What you value. Virtues are being in the habit, so they're kind of walking the walk. I often see people act contrary to their values, but it's harder to act contrary to a habit because with something that is habitual, you tend to going to do again and again, without even thinking about it. Another important distinction is between virtues and morality. Oftentimes people conflate those words. When we say a virtuous person, we think we mean a moral person, right? I mean, stop me if you disagree, right? That seems to be a sort of normal way of thinking about it, but it's much more than that. Virtue is not just moral, but also practical excellence. When you're good at something, it doesn't just mean you're morally good, but you're also effective, you know? So it's kind of like a combination of both ethics and excellence, or ethics and effectiveness, say. As Catholics, we're aware of the moral significance of virtue. I don't think we fully understand the practical implications. Courage, for example, say if you're running an enterprise, being courageous is both the right thing to do, but it's also what is necessary for the thing to be successful, yeah? Living virtues is a way to live a Christian life more fully, but it's also more easily because they are habits. Anything you do out of habit is easier to do. But if you have the habit of brushing your teeth every morning, it's less of an effort than if you have to think about it every time you want to do it. Does something being habitual make it less morally good. Just because something is easier, does it make it less morally good? That's a false idea. Right? That actually comes to us, I think, from mainly from Kant, from some of the Enlightenment. The original classical idea, also the Catholic idea, is that the more virtuous you are, the easier it is to be virtuous. It's less hard, which doesn't make it any less moral. In fact, it makes it more perfect, more morally perfect, to do the good thing easily. The more courageous you are, the easier it is to do courageous things. Yeah? So can anyone acquire virtues? Or are they kind of special strengths that some people have, some people don't? The answer there is anyone can acquire any virtue because they are habits. Like any other habit, by a little bit of practice repeatedly, you can acquire any virtue. So how are the virtues different from regular habits? So I mentioned brushing your teeth or, say, making your bed, habits like that. How are they different from virtues? Virtues, three ways in particular that stand out. Virtues have a much wider scope. So if you have the habit of brushing your teeth, it's useful for brushing your teeth. There's not much else you can do other than maybe taking the grout off the shower, you know, if you do that, if you use a toothbrush to do that, you know. Whereas if you learn courage, say, does anybody play football here? Rugby? Any sport where you could get hurt? Okay. So if you cultivate courage on the rugby field, right, you can use that courage in a job interview. You can use that courage to give a speech, for example. It's very portable. These virtues are very portable, unlike other habits. The second difference is that as you grow in virtues, you get happier. The more virtuous you are, the happier you are. Aristotle told us this, so we believe him, but in case you don't, more recently, in the field of positive psychology, there have been numerous studies that show us empirically that people who grow in virtue actually grow in happiness. And it seems to be a causal connection, because you track people, and as they're growing, the happiness is increasing. It's not just necessarily the other way around, that happy people tend to be more virtuous, that there's a causal relationship. And then the third, and this one, I don't think Aristotle knew this, but it kind of blows my mind, is the more virtuous you are, the healthier you become. To give you an example of a specific study on gratitude. So gratitude is a virtue, the virtue of being, you know, giving thanks for what you have, the good things you have. It's a fairly easy virtue to study because it's relatively easy to help somebody grow in gratitude. You have them keep a gratitude journal. So at the end of each day or at the beginning of each day, you write down the things you are thankful for. So they've done studies where they take two groups, and one group will do a diary about something, and another group will do a diary specifically about things that they are grateful for. And over maybe a two-month period, those who are growing in gratitude just by keeping a gratitude diary report being happier than the other group. They also have a decrease in incidences of depression, anxiety, chronic pain. It's kind of freaky when you think about it. It's like, how does becoming more grateful make you hurt less, you know? About 6 months ago, I had my first ever serious back problems in my life, and I had bad sciatica to the point where I'd spend like a week lying down. And I knew about this, so I was like, I'm going to start doing the gratitude diary. Now, I also went to the doctor, and I got steroid shots and stuff, so I did everything I could. And my wife laughs because she said, no, just because you did that stupid gratitude diary, how did it have any effect? Okay, so a month ago, I stopped the gratitude diary, and the pain started coming back. So I'm doing it again. I'm doing the gratitude diary again. I'm not messing with that anymore. But it's not just gratitude, but the whole range. As you read about the different virtues and the studies people have come across, you see this pattern again and again. They make you happier. They make you healthier. It's like there's this bunch of these superpowers out there waiting to be taken up by anybody that wants. Because the word virtue is so loaded, I have taken to calling them, when I speak to more secular audiences, super habits. These are habits that give you these superpowers. They make you stronger, make you happier, and they make you healthier. So how do we do this? How do we grow in a virtue? How many of you are familiar with a book called Atomic Habits? Anybody heard of Atomic Habits? It's reasonably popular, sold a couple of million copies, so three or four of you here. It's a neat book, right? It talks about how to cultivate any habit that you want, or how to get rid of a bad habit, how to get a good habit. Very practical, And it just generally involves things like repeated practice of small things, stacking habits. So if you already have a habit, add another one onto it so the one becomes a trigger of the other, you know, that sort of thing. Everything you read about in Atomic Habits applies to virtue, even though he never mentions the virtue word in the book or anywhere. That's how you would grow in virtue. You would just, in the same way you would pick up any other habits. We'll talk briefly about the opposite of virtue would be a vice, a bad habit. Often we see two opposing vices for each virtue, too much and too little. So for example, I've been using the example of courage for dealing with fears. So too much concern with fear is the vice of cowardice, but too little concern with fear is foolhardiness, right? Where you're just stupid about things and you go get yourself in trouble unnecessarily, or recklessness, the different names. But the right amount of concern for fear would be courage, where you accept your fears and you move forward anyway. So courage is not the habit of not having fear. You can't do that. Fear just comes. It's an emotion like any other emotion. If you try to control it, you cause problems for yourself. Courage is, I am afraid, but I'm going to do what I need to do anyway. And that's a habit that anybody can acquire. Growing from a vice to a virtue happens through four stages, loosely speaking. You don't just go from not having the virtue to, boom, having it all of a sudden. The four stages, so you go from vice to virtue. The two intervening stages were classically called incontinence and continence. We don't use those words anymore because they mean something else, right? Which is bladder control, right? So it's from Latin, continentia and incontinentia. But that's the typical translation. In philosophy class, they use those words, but I think for everyday living, it's sort of problematic. Fortunately, there is a four-stage schema that people use when they're talking about skill development that I think applies really well here, where they talk about when you're growing in a skill, you start out from a state of unconscious incompetence, which means you don't know and you don't know that you don't know. You don't know how to do something and you don't even know that you don't know how to do something. So you might be a complete scaredy cat and you have no idea that you're a scaredy cat. You just think it's smart to go through life being afraid of everything and just being, you know, like get away from things that scare you. So that would be unconscious incompetence. So somebody who is vicious, somebody who has a vice, is not troubled by that vice. Like to be truly a vice, it's so part of you as a bad habit that it doesn't bother you. I mean, it might in some ways in your conscience, but you've probably completely dulled your conscience. So that's the kind of the low point. The first step in the right direction then is what in this framework is called conscious incompetence. So now I'm aware that I'm a scaredy cat. I'm aware that my fear rules my life. And I start to realize that's not a good thing. The next step up gets to conscious competence, where I have to make an effort every time. And by and large, I make that effort and I'm successful. So I'm afraid, I make an effort, I overcome my fear, I do what I need to do. But it's still an effort. So it's not yet virtue. So virtue is when it's unconscious competence. So I do the right thing, but I don't even have to think about it. So I'm afraid, but I keep moving anyway, and it's almost effortless. I mean, that the aspiration to be fully virtuous, it's pretty much effortless. I just do the brave thing, don't even have to think about it. So those are the four stages that you'll go through. I think most human beings walking this earth are sitting somewhere in the middle too. You know, it's like very few people who are actually vicious who are just kind of so habitually, you know, with these bad habits, and very few saints, you know, who are just virtuous in every way. But it's the aspiration for all of us. Now, what I want to get to is talk about which virtues should you be concerned about. And the larger question, can any positive abstract noun be a virtue? Did any of you ever do this thing in high school where they have like a virtue of the month or a virtue of the week? Have you ever run into anything like that? I see that in some schools, and you get the sense that there's never a repetition. There's always a new one, right? And so there's never-ending list of virtues, which can be a little bit overwhelming. So like when do we stop, you know? Things like harmony, prosperity, serenity, unity, integrity, are these virtues? They sound like virtues, but in the classical sense, they aren't. So is there anything that can tell us which of these habits are actually virtues and which ones we should focus on? What we need, I think, is not just a list of virtues, but some kind of a system that's going to show how they all fit together. Because there are many good Catholic books about virtue. So Father Romano Guardini has a famous one, for example. My old boss, John Garvey, just published one last year. Several others, good books about virtue. The problem is every book has a somewhat different list. So there's overlap. You know, there's a few things that you would expect to see in every one. But the number and the mix are different in each one. And then you think, okay, well, how am I supposed to know which ones I should focus on if all these good Catholic authors can't even agree, you know? And how do we know how they all fit together? Let me explain what I mean by this sort of fit together. So one of my hobbies is sailing. Before I got married 27 years ago, I had a nice sailing boat, and then after our first child arrived, we sold it to buy a station wagon, you know, because you need that when you're married. But our youngest is now 15 years old, so, you know, I have a bit more time. So I finally bought my first keelboat in 27 years. It's an old boat because I'm a professor. I can't afford a new one, you know. It's a 30-year-old boat. I had to learn quickly about boat maintenance and so on. It has a small marine diesel engine, auxiliary engine. So I'm looking online about how to maintain these engines. And the first thing I find is a list of spare parts that I could buy for this engine. I thought, well, that's handy to have this list, comprehensive list of spare parts. The next thing I found was a diagram of the engine showing how all those parts fit together, right? What do you think was more valuable for me, the list of parts or the diagram that shows how they fit together? Obviously the latter, right? I think it's the same with virtue. It's not every other book I've seen is always, here's the list of virtues. Show me how they all fit together to make up a comprehensive and flourishing human life. Enter St. Thomas Aquinas. So, during COVID, when we were all locked at home, I had 2 hours gained. I live in Virginia, it takes me an hour each way, you know, to commute into work. So with those 2 extra hours, I thought, well, I should do what any good business dean would do and just reread the Summa Theologica, you know? I read the section on virtue. I had read parts of it, good parts of it before, but this time reading it through, it just blew my mind. And to explain this, why it blew my mind, I want to take you back. So years before I started academia, I spent a number of years with McKinsey and Company. They're a consulting firm. Some of you familiar? Any of you planning to go into consulting? One, all right, you're going to get a bonus. Might, okay, all right. They teach you something when you first get there. At McKinsey and every other consulting firm, I think, does that now. About how to take apart a client business problem and then kind of solve the problem for your client, because that's what consultants are supposed to do. As you're taking apart a problem, it's very important that you cover every part of the problem and you cover it only once, so you're not wasting time and you're not leaving anything out. And so they had this acronym. The acronym was MECE, M-E-C-E, which stood for Mutually Exclusive, Collectively Exhaustive. In other words, every part and every part only once, right? So for example, when you're taking apart a business problem, you'll say, okay, let's separate it. You have cost issues, so you separate, okay, we've got fixed costs, variable costs, and then the fixed costs we break down. So you can imagine how that would go. It would apply to any sort of problem. So I'm reading the Summa, and I realize that St. Thomas isn't just giving us a list of virtues. He's giving us a MECE analysis of the entire human life, breaking apart, distinguishing, and showing how every aspect of your life, there is a virtue for that. So whatever problem you may be struggling with right now, whatever challenge you're facing, there is a particular virtue that you can grow in that is going to help you solve that problem and make that part of your life easier for you. How cool is that? How come no one ever told us this, you know? So the way he does it is he starts at the first distinction. He says, okay, let's distinguish between your natural life and your supernatural life, right? And the supernatural life, we know what virtues belong to that. It's faith, hope, and charity, right? The three theological virtues. Then the natural life, he says, well, let's split that into your intellectual life and then your practical day-to-day life. Intellectual life has its own virtues, so wisdom, science, understanding, art. And then the practical life, he says, let's break that down into our thoughts, our actions, and our feelings. He's actually talking about will, intellect, and passions, but I'm sort of translating into contemporary language just to make this practical. So thoughts, actions, feelings. If you think about your everyday life, right? Is there anything that occupies you other than your thoughts, your actions, your feelings? No, right? That's every day. That's what happens, right? And your thoughts in particular, your practical thoughts are typically oriented to a decision. What are you thinking about all day long? When should I do my homework? Should I do my homework? What should I have for lunch? When should I go to sleep? Who should I hang out with? You know, just like decisions, this is all the way through. Your actions throughout the day, the most significant ones are typically interactions with others. And then your feelings, he makes a further distinction there. He talks about the distinguishing between irascible and concupiscible passions. To simplify things, let's talk about the difference between fears and desires. So if you take all the emotions you feel, you can divide them roughly into two groups. Those that draw you towards something, your desires, and those that push you away from something, which would be your fears. Okay? So you have your thoughts, your actions, and the two kinds of feelings, fear and desire. Your thoughts about decision is mainly oriented to decision making, is the habit of practical wisdom or prudence, which is the habit of making wise decisions. Your actions or your interactions with others is the habit of justice, which is being fair to everybody. Dealing with fears, we already touched on that, is the virtue or the habit of courage. Dealing with desires is the habit of temperance or self-discipline. How many of you have heard of the cardinal virtues, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance? Everybody's heard these, right? At some point in Catholic life, you heard of these four. If you ever wondered, why do they keep always bringing up these four? You now know the answer. Because if you have those four habits, all of your thoughts, your actions, your feelings all day long are in order. You have habits for dealing with all of those, right? See how powerful this is. And so for each part of your life, there's one of those four virtues. Like if I'm struggling with making decisions, I need to get better at the habit of practical wisdom or prudence. If I struggle with anxiety, then I need to grow in courage, right? I mean, in fact, and interestingly, if you look at psychiatric treatment, one of the most popular and successful for anxiety and depression is cognitive behavioral therapy, right? Which is basically cultivating the habit of resilience, which is part of the habit of the virtue of courage. So this all kind of fits together very nicely. Now the one catch here, of course, is each of these habits are big habits, right? It's an effort to grow in courage. It's an effort to grow in prudence. Actually, before I go there, one other thing. So these four, plus the intellectual habits, plus the spiritual habits that I mentioned, plus some others that I'll talk about, together fit in a way that the diagram of my engine, my marine engine, fit together, in a way that you might call a human operating system. Okay, the analogy being your iPhone operating system. What happens to you, what happens to the phone when you don't update the operating system on your phone? Have you ever had this experience? What starts to happen to the phone? It slows down, right? Some of the apps stop working, you know. It actually gets easier to be hacked if you don't upgrade. Yeah. I think it's the same with this sort of human operating system. If we're not constantly growing in virtue, we're not as effective as we could be. We're not as happy as we could be. Our society desperately needs an update of this human operating system. It explains a lot of the problems we're facing right now, you know. Happily, folks in the secular world are starting to rediscover these things. I mentioned positive psychology before. Some 30 years they've been doing research on virtues, which is terrific. They seem to go out of their way to make them just different enough from the classical virtues to complicate things, but that's all right. We can still use their work. But even in the business world, so I mentioned McKinsey before. A couple of years ago, McKinsey came out with a paper saying what's really important in a corporation is not so much the skills that the employees have, but the underlying capabilities like humility and courage and self-discipline. It's like, oh, yeah, we know these. They never use the word, they called them distinct elements of talent. They never use the word virtue. Around a similar time, Deloitte, another consulting firm, comes up with a similar paper saying it's really important that employees have these distinctive capabilities called like courage and humility and self-discipline. It's like, woo, okay, they don't use the word virtue either. And so on and so forth. Another group calls them durable skills like humility, courage. All right, good. We're finally all rediscovering what we need to rediscover, you know. So to the question, okay, these are heavy lifts, though. How do you train employees? How do you yourself grow in any of the cardinal virtues, for example? And this is where Aquinas comes in again to help us out. He shows that every one of the cardinal virtues has several associated kind of smaller virtues that, in a sense, build up to it. So you can start with a smaller one and work your way up. In fact, that's why we came around to calling them the cardinal virtues from the Latin cardo, which means hinge or pivot. So they are pivotal virtues that many other virtues turn on. The medieval scholars used to draw pictures of a tree of virtues. So the big branches were the cardinal virtues, and then the smaller branches were these other virtues. I have been struggling with a good way to... Can you pass these out? To do this. So this is Dina Bella's modern virtue of the tree of virtues. So I'm going to... modern diagram of the tree of virtues. Pass it around. Instead of a tree, think of it as a cross-section of a tree trunk. So there are rings. I hope we have enough. I brought 20. If not, maybe you could share. So there's a lot on the page, but once we go through it, you're going to see it's very straightforward. Okay, perfect. How about that? All right, good. Everybody have one? Yes? We have extras too. All right. Okay, so think of it as a cross-section of a tree trunk, and the rings, every ring as we move outwards is another distinction, okay? I keep saying distinction, not division. We're not dividing up your life so that the spiritual life is on one side and the... No, these are just distinctions. These are all part of a human life. So look at the center where it says human life. So that's an entire human life. The first distinction is that sort of supposed to be gold color is between your material and spiritual or supernatural and natural. The spiritual life, the reason why I extend it out as like a pie slice all to the edge there is there are those three, faith, hope, and charity, or faith, hope, and love, the theological virtues. Those are the habits of the spiritual life. They are different from all the others in that they are infused virtues, right? God gives them to us directly. You cannot, on your own effort, build up any of these virtues. You can do a lot to tear them down, but in terms of, you need God's grace to build them up. God's grace helps with the others, and we can talk about that, but God's grace exclusively builds us up in the theological virtues. The next ring, then, so we take, notice, so the spiritual life slice kind of is now out of the picture, if you will, and the remaining ring that says material life, that's what we now distinguish. So we have the practical life, and the intellectual life is the next distinction. And so we've got science, art, wisdom, understanding. There's some debate about whether art is an intellectual virtue, but just doesn't really matter. We're not going to talk about it much. So we kind of remove that slice now, and the remaining three quarters is what I want to focus on. I said this is going to be a practical talk, so practical everyday life. If you look, start at the next ring now that says feelings, decisions, interactions, right? So that's the sort of thoughts, actions, feelings part. And then the feelings, the next ring has desires and fears. So, and then if we've got self-discipline or temperance, courage, we have practical wisdom or prudence and justice as the next couple of rings there. Can you all see those? Yep, okay. So let me just show you. I'm not going to go through this entire thing. There's 50 virtues in all around the ring. But I'm just going to, let me just focus on self-discipline or temperance just to show you but let's look at courage because it's much simpler to show you how this works. So you see at around the sort of 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock where it says fears, and then you have the virtue of courage. According to St. Thomas, courage in its pure sense only exists in the face of fears of death. So a firefighter going into a burning building or a soldier, you know, or a mom about to give birth, like where there's a danger of dying, right, then that's true courage. For every other challenge, there are different virtues. So see how he makes the distinctions. He says for every other challenge in the world, we can divide all of those into two. See the messiness here? He's always making this distinction between kind of, and every distinction is complete, as not overlapping, and nothing is left out. So every other challenge in the world that is not a deadly challenge is either one that you can overcome or one that has to be endured. You see that? It's like either I can just fight it and win it, or I can't, maybe like a chronic disease, for example. I'm stuck with it. I just have to endure it, okay? So if we look at the enduring, he says, and those will be either physical or mental. Of course, there could be both, but there's going to be one or the other or both present. So physical challenges, he says, that's the virtue or the habit of perseverance. So I'm really tired. I don't want to finish this paper. I want to go to bed, but I just keep going. That's the habit, the virtue of perseverance. And then mental challenges, I'm afraid or I'm sad or I'm anxious, but I need to keep going. That's the habit of resilience, right? The habit of just keeping going even though you're facing a mental challenge. And then in terms of overcoming challenges, here it gets really practical. He says there's two ways to overcome a challenge, with or without cash. Right? You can pay to fix it or you can fix it some other way. I mean, this guy is so practical, right? So the great effort without cash is the virtue of magnanimity, right? That is from the Latin mania anima, means big soul. It's just like putting a huge effort into something difficult, and we did it, you know? And then the other one is munificence, which is pouring a large amount of money to solve a big problem. Your own money, right? Taking someone else's money, that's not munificence, that's just tax, right? So whatever. So you see how this works? Like, so courage is fairly simple. I'll spend a little bit more time on self-discipline, and then I will... wrap up and take questions. Self-discipline, you have, he divides into, so it's temperance, it's dealing with our desires. And this is really cool here. What he points out is what psychologists have also discovered, is that when dealing with your desires, if they're desires that you don't want or desires that are problematic, right? So the virtue of temperance, of self-discipline, is basically not about squishing your desires or trying to kill them. It's about reorienting them into productive directions. Okay, that's really, really important. I'll give you some examples. So he says, okay, two kinds of desires, mental and physical. The physical are the strongest because they tend to basically the maintenance, the continuation of the human race. So we have nourishment. If we don't eat or drink, we die. You have reproduction. If we don't reproduce, the human race dies out. He included habits for dealing with stuff, with material things elsewhere. But in our society, I think the desire for things is almost as strong as the desire for sex or for food. You know, so he has two kinds there: for desire for too many things or for too fancy things. So the virtues of thrift and simplicity there. But if you go up to the midnight part there, or the 12 o'clock, starting over there, so we have the mental desires over there. He says we have mental desires about the external world and about yourself. I'm going to the rings again. In terms of desires about the external world, I have desires to do things, to know things, and to control things. Desires to do things, I have desires to do petty, silly things. And for that, I have the virtue of restraint. You know, I'm on Amazon, I see something I like, oh, I want to buy that. You know, just the virtue of restraint says, wait, maybe put it on a wish list or count to 10 or whatever. There's also desires to do great things, which also have to be managed. Because if you have desire to do great things and you run off and start doing, but you, like Christ talks about building a tower and you don't anticipate what you're going to need, do I have it in me? Can I do this? It's not saying you shouldn't stretch yourself, but you should do so intelligently. So that's the virtue of humility, right? Virtue of humility is not about making yourself seem low. It's about having an accurate assessment of yourself, not too inflated or not underestimated. So having the true sense of what you are capable of doing, that is the virtue of humility. In terms of desires to know, so this is really helpful as students. So we all have some level of curiosity, right? So the virtue of diligence is not the virtue of like forcing yourself to study. That's not the virtue. The virtue is taking your desire to know things and channeling it so that you'll want to know what your studies are trying to teach you. That's the virtue of diligence. So it's falling in love with the subject that you are studying. is true diligence, okay? And it's far more effective than just forcing yourself to suck it in and study, you know? Just, and there are little hacks you can use, you know, just like thinking about, well, how can I make this practical? How can I use this in my life, for example? Or who could use this? Or what's a creative way of learning this? Or finding something new out of it, and so on. In terms of the desire to be in control, I invented a word there, gentle firmness. So there's in the moment and after the fact. After the fact, when you lose control, the virtue of forgiveness is the right, where someone else loses control, the virtue of forgiveness. Gentle firmness, the word we normally use is meekness. But the problem with many of these virtue words is they have completely lost their meaning. Like humility is one of them. We think it means just being, that to be humble means to be low. No, it just, as I said, accurate assessment of yourself. When we think of meek, we think of somebody as a doormat, you know. But Christ said, you know, I am meek and humble of heart. He's no doormat, right? Toughest guy in the universe. So I changed it because what meekness really means, there's another English word, mansuetude. That doesn't help, right? Nobody knows what mansuetude is, right? It's just a transliteration from the Latin. Mansuetudo is the Latin word for meekness. Or I use the word gentle firmness because that's exactly what meekness is you are gentle and firm. The visual of a velvet glove over a steel fist, right? It's like you're really strong, but you're nice about it, you know? So when you're angry, you use that anger to be firm, not to freak out, you know? So it's a really powerful, very important virtue, very lacking in our world today. Anyway, I can go on and on and on, but I won't. But we can dive into any of these if you like. I'm working on a book, so on all of them, so I'm reasonably familiar now with all of them. Let me just give you some suggestions for how you might use this. I said I want this to be practical. One way is to just start at the 12 o'clock and start to go through. And the first one you hit that you say, gee, I could use that, is a good one to start with. Because I tried to put them in the order that they sort of make sense. Augustine talks about this. You have to start with self-discipline, because if you have no self-discipline, nothing else matters, right? You will never follow through on anything you're trying to do. Once you have self-discipline, then the next one to focus on is courage, because if you don't have courage, every time you hit an obstacle, you get knocked back and you won't get much accomplished, even though you have self-discipline. Once you have courage, it's kind of a toss-up. Some say justice, some say practical wisdom or prudence. I like the idea of prudence because you to kind of get your decision-making in order, and then once you have that, make sure that everything you do is fair, is just, that you work kind of fairly, and that's so justice, that you work with everybody. So that's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is thinking about what most bothers me right now? What most holds me back from doing what I want to do? What most upsets me in my life? And then try to find the virtue that's going to fix that for you, and you work on that. At the bottom left of the diagram, I refer to something called the Bush Virtue Diagnostic. You can either type in that 30-some letter URL, or you can just Google Bush Virtue Diagnostic and it'll pop right up, easy. And it's a diagnostic tool where it just asks you questions. Would you like to get better in this or that, this or that? And it's basically talking you through from the center of this wheel. It doesn't show the wheel because we developed it before we developed this diagram, so we're going to have to go back and fix it, but it works. And as you go through, eventually, by answering these questions, you get to one of the virtues on the outside ring. And there you will find a definition of the virtue. You'll find a summary of the psychological research on that virtue, telling you kind of what makes for that virtue to grow and so on. You will find scriptural resources and other kind of ancient sources talking about that virtue. And then you will find case examples of people living that virtue, typically in business situations, because we did this for a business school, just to kind of give you a better understanding of what that virtue is, and then tips for how to get started with that virtue. So for every one of these, there's a one or two simple things you can do. So for example, resilience is a big one. A lot of college-age students would like to grow in resilience. So here's a really cool trick that I learned from a guy on YouTube. Challenge yourself for 60 days, once a day. You're going to ask somebody for something or ask a question where the answer is going to be no. Like, can I have an extension on this course? No. You know, go to Banana Republic. Do you sell shoes? You know, whatever. Something that where you know the answer is going to be no. Do it once a day for 60 days. Some of you are going, I can never do that. You're exactly the person who needs to do this exercise. Exactly. Because what happens after 60 days is you realize, no doesn't hurt me. It's embarrassing, but soon you realize, big deal. So he said no, move on, you know. And now you're starting to grow in resilience. Then you try a new challenge for a while. And the beauty about these things is they get easier, right? As they become habitual, they get easier. So little steps, and before you know it, you're growing in virtue. And for the this is the project for the rest of your life, right? There are 50 of them. So it's not infinite, but there are only 50. Like you got at least 50 years to live. You know, you do one of these a year. You could do one of these probably a month and just kind of move around. It's the plan. This is the plan, you know. And as I say, you just get happier and more effective. What I promised you before, right? So at the beginning of the class. Okay. The other thing, just to close with this, and this is really fun, is none of these are new for you. Okay? You have all of these. These are not arrows in a quiver where you kind of strengths that you might or might not have. These are more like wheels on a bus. Okay? Some of them are a little soft. Some of them may be completely flat, you know. But you have all these wheels. You just have to pump them up one by one, you know. So you can do this.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.